Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to Series 2 of Postcards from the Edge, a podcast where every week I'll be Zooming, is that a word, with some amazing guests to chat about life, love, family, and all the other little things that basically drive them and me to the edge. But more importantly, we'll be chatting to them about their coping mechanisms and how they de-stress, unwind, and learn to take life a little bit less seriously. We all know that I definitely need help in that category. So, without further ado, let's get straight to it, shall we? Ladies and gentlemen, I present to you Her Royal Highness, the Queen of Kitchen Disco, Super Mom, Super Pop Star, and now Super Podcaster, Sophie Ellis-Bextor. Who needs She Sells Seashells by the Seashore when you've got a line like that? Anyway, this week, Sophie and I chat about kitchen lockdowns, having a lot of children, which we absolutely do have, and how to get yourself out of the mum hole, aka striking that always tough mom-home-work-life balance. It's difficult, but we're going to try. It's one of my favorite conversations of the series so far. Here it is. Postcards
from the Edge. Today's guest is Sophie Ellis-Bextor, who I am so excited to introduce. She is an English songwriter, singer, host of her own kitchen disco broadcasts, host of her own podcast, Spinning Plates, and just one incredible badass mommy and working lady. I am a fan of yours. I'm excited you're here. You a burst of joy, and I am really happy to welcome you on this podcast.
Oh, that was lovely, Ada. Thank you. Nice to talk to you as well.
I mean, if I could just twist my words anymore. You know what it is, Sophie? I think when I was looking at all of your accomplishments, there are so many on the list that actually getting them out in a fluid intro was almost impossible because you do so many things.
Oh, that's kind. I feel like I probably need some things with more substance, though.
Like, no, by the way,
a lot of fun stuff. But
fun stuff is definite. First of all, I'm all about the joy, so I think that like fun stuff should be the like you know in that pyramid, like the food pyramid. Mm-hmm. I think fun stuff and joy should be the biggest bit.
Cool. Like, okay, that's good. That's what my
then
pyramid
you can
looks
like tack on work and like healthy eating. That could be like the small bit at the top, but like the fun is the big base. That's the fun bit. When I was thinking about your intro too, because I was like, it was an interesting one. Cause when I was reading through some of your bio, you know, mm-hmm. like it's not, it doesn't go unnoticed that you have five children, five boys. And, and where in that pie does the mom bit go? Because you also professionally do so many things. And I was reading some of your quotes and you were saying what the cool thing for you as you got older was not being apologetic about wanting both of those things in your life, which I really resonate with because I think it's really easy to happily get lost in the mom role, but mm-hmm. to kind of lose yourself, especially when you're used to having a career and doing things. And not that there's anything wrong with getting lost in the mom role, but where do you carve out that space for yourself? And is that okay to want that for yourself? And I really resonated with that desire, that identity, that schism between the two things. And I think when I look at you and I look at your accomplishments and just being in your presence, which I've luckily have gotten the chance to be in, is that you get to represent all of those things, that you are so passionate about your work and so passionate about your family. And I think you strike that balance so beautifully.
Oh, that's kind. I mean, I think I still struggle with it a bit though. I think I'm always, probably why we had that conversation when we were last together is probably because I'm a little bit obsessed with how other people are doing it.
Yeah,
and
totally.
I think, and I think also, it has been quite a long road really to get to a point where I feel the most sort of at peace with the fact that I do have this selfish side of me that loves to do what I want to do, you know, even though it means that I sometimes have to say to my kids, oh, I'm sorry, I can't be there for that, or I'm going to be away for that bit because my work matters too. And I think that it took me quite a long time to kind of give myself permission really to do both things. And I know that that's, you know, age old. I know that, you know, I'm not the first person to feel like that. But it's something that's quite a personal, personal balance to strike, really. Because what works for one person might not be the same for someone else. So I think you've got to just check in with yourself quite a lot, haven't you? And some weeks I'm like, yeah, this week's been really good. And other weeks I think I wasn't really keeping my eye on the ball with work, or I don't think I've been completely with it with what's going on with the kids. So it's kind of getting that thing so that you get the end of most weeks and think that kind of worked this week.
Isn't it interesting though? There are two things that struck me. One thing is that I think you're exactly in the same boat as every parent, where the balance is always changing on what balance is. It's like a friggin' BOSU ball. It's like
yeah.
One week you think you've got the family part nailed. Then the next week you feel like you've totally fucked up, but you've got some professional things in. Then,
yeah.
I mean, it never actually feels totally aligned. You just get in a rhythm where you feel like the discomfort is less on both sides. So maybe you've struck the balance. And then,
yeah.
And then it all just gets fucked up and then something happens and you just feel like a complete failure.
Yeah. Yeah.
The other thing though is it's interesting that, because I heard you say it, I know it's the same voice that goes in my head, is you use the word selfish, that mommy has to be selfish and do her work. And it's interesting because, like, I see Rob going off to do his work and I don't think he ever thinks of it as being selfish. And it's interesting as women that we feel like, and I don't know if that's because of what we've inherently, like what we've inherited culturally, you know, from our mothers and their mothers, like societally what's expected of us, but how we do feel guilty when we pursue something that's ours, or that it feels like it's at the behest of our children, or that it's wrong to want those things because it's selfish, that judgment we put in place. Because I feel the same thing when I'm on set or I'm doing something, even this podcast, you know, it's like Teddy wanted me, she's in the background right now. She's painting Nanny Janny's nails, but she wanted me to do something with her. And I was like, well, mommy can't because mommy's doing the podcast. You know, mm-hmm. And it's that thing where you judge yourself and you do find it selfish sometimes, and that voice that you have to fight. Whereas I look at Rob and I imagine many men, and they don't feel like it's selfish. Why did
definitely?
Why do we do that? Why do we? What do you think that we're there? Because, you know, in your own right, you had a career, you have a career before you were mom. You've always relied on yourself. Like, why does it become selfish all of a sudden?
I suppose it's probably a lot of it's cultural, because in most setups, you know, the child raising is still pretty traditional, and the expectations that are there are quite traditional. And I think probably, you know, I think there's a lot of looking left and right to see what other women are getting up to and working
totally.
It all out. And I just think, you know, it can't be a coincidence that, generally speaking, working fathers don't feel that guilt. When if I go to work, I invariably get asked questions in interviews about, so who's got the kids when you're away, or just generally lots of questions about the fact I have children. But I don't think Richard really gets asked that much about having kids.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. Does Richard?
Yeah.
Because I don't think Rob, I mean, I've been there in his interviews, and I've never heard anyone say, do you feel guilty being away from the kids? Or who's looking after the kids while you're on
exactly.
the road?
Exactly.
Like,
exactly.
I've just been with him during the time. I think there's a reference to him being a father.
Yeah.
Like, it's noted that he has children.
Yes. Noted,
and that
yeah.
he's happily married. But I don't think anyone ever grills him about, well, how do you how do you strike the balance, or how do you, how do you cope with working and being a dad? It's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I guess as well, if I'm working, the assumption is that probably I've organized childcare, whereas Richard's working, I think the assumption is that probably the kids are with me.
Yeah. But it's interesting that, isn't it? That it's not a like for like.
No, but I think also tied up in that is also my own desires to be what I would call like a good mum. And part of that is about being really present and engaged with what my kids are getting up to. So that's probably where that pressure comes from as well, where I'm thinking, am I around enough? Do I know, you know, am I keeping on top of everything? You know, if they have emotional needs, I want the kids to come to me and I want them to feel like I know what's going on in their world. So that's probably just, you know, my own bit of pressure I'm putting in there, really. And I like it as well. I want to be good at that stuff.
Of course it is. It's a hard one because we have this like inherent, maybe it's just how we're born in terms of the men are the hunters and the women are the nest makers, but you want your kids to come to you. Like I definitely would be annoyed if the kids came to Rob before coming to me on an issue because I like to be needed. And then I feel too. Like if I'm not there, I won't be needed. Oh, hold on. That is Rob. He keeps calling. Sorry.
Okay, that's all right. Check he's all right.
Babe, I'm doing my podcast with Sophie. Can you stop calling me? Love you. He's just landed in Australia.
Oh, really?
Just cool. Told him to piss off.
That's nice. You landed safe.
I know. I'm glad. Yeah, but I'm working. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I'm working. Mommy's working. I was going to ask you about, because this podcast, I mean, I'm just fascinated because I feel like, first of all, you're the only person who has more children than I do and manages to keep it all afloat and work and do all of those things. How did you navigate? Because I was watching you do your kitchen disco sing-alongs, which made me really happy. And actually, I had so many questions because it was such a beautiful insight into your home life. it was great because I mean, I think with my family, we did formal Fridays. We got dressed up every Friday and we had formal dinners and that was our
thing. Oh, that's fun.
Formal Fridays. It was kind of like we'd bookend the week and make it feel like something was happening, even though we weren't leaving the house.
You needed that, didn't you? Yeah.
Yeah. And when I saw your house with like a disco ball and streamers and the kids playing and the colorful outfits, I was like, wow, this is like next level amazing. And I was wondering, because I think as moms, humans, the world, we were all on the edge constantly during lockdown, which is the real impetus of this season is kind of what takes us to the edge and how do we get off the edge, you know? And I was looking at these disco performances and they seemed so full of joy and light. And you're really trying to get everyone to have a good time alongside of you.
Yeah.
What was bringing you to your edge at that point? Because I know it couldn't have all been disco dance party for five.
Oh, boys. No. It wasn't. Well, I found the first few weeks, especially of lockdowns and everything that was going on in the news, just incredibly stressful, like a real hum of anxiety and the heaviness of the news and trying to wrap my head around what was really going on and how things might unfold and how things were going to impact everybody I cared about. And I quite quickly realized as well that my tension levels were a lot higher. I was a lot more snappy. I was more sweary, just, you know, like a bit rawer, basically.
Yeah.
So the discos really came about because as a family, I think that's, you know, jumping around to music is something we've often turned to as a way just to sort of release tension. It's as much that as it is about having fun. And actually by doing that and letting that stress and adrenaline flow out into something more upbeat, I always felt better. Basically, I always felt better after the discos. But no, the house was very much, it was domesticity and discos and not much else. There wasn't really any other projects that I was getting up to. I couldn't be creative. I didn't feel creative at all. And it really taught me that there was so much about the casual stuff in my life that I really needed just to feel, you know, mentally really good. Like even if it's just walking back from dropping the kids at school and getting myself a coffee and phoning a friend on the way back, or when I see my musician friends, just before we do a gig, the bit where we're all just chatting and, you know, catching up with one another, all that stuff is actually really important. So when all that was taken away, yeah, I was quite stressed and tense, really quite quickly.
Emotional.
And also we had, as a family, and I know this was happening in lots of households, but we had our own, you know, very close to home, my stepdad at the time that everything kicked off in March 2020, he was already having treatment for lung cancer. So everything that was happening in terms of the virus and how it was spread, that was all very scary in terms of, like, it really would have been catastrophic if he'd caught it. So the cruelty of, I only lived 10 minutes away from my mum, so I would walk down the road to see her, but we'd stand at the end of the path and just wave at grandma and grandpa, because that was, you know, the right thing to do. Just, I thought the cruelty of this abstract virus that could kill people that you wanted to hug is just, I never quite, I thought that was just a very mean aspect of what was going on.
I mean, my mom was, I think we discussed this, my mom was diagnosed with cancer at the beginning of the pandemic. So she had to start chemo and radiation immediately. And it was that same thing. It was like, my mom and I are best friends and we live together and we're inseparable. And all of a sudden I couldn't have her live in the house with me.
Yeah.
She had to live with her boyfriend. I couldn't, you know, I think there was a point at which a couple months in, I trusted that if I was 30 feet away from her in the garden, then that would be okay. But just, you know, and not knowing if it was just going to take her at any moment, because if she got it, it was the same thing. It would have been catastrophic. She wouldn't have made it, you know, and it was a cruel, I think that was a real edge for me too. It's just this abstract cruelty of, you know, all the things that you care about have been taken away. And it's like this invisible monster, and you don't know when you're going to get to your loved one, if you're going to get to your loved one in time, because they might go and you might never get to hug them again.
Exactly.
And that physical connection, that all the physical connectivity between our loved ones and our friends just went away.
Yeah.
And I think I agree. That was a really, it was a cruel moment in all of this, I think. And that's why I think when I saw your disco performances, it was such a bright light, because there was so little that felt cheery and felt joyful. And
yeah, it was silly. Nobody was silly. There wasn't a lot of silliness going on. And I think when we did the first disco, I thought, oh, are people going to think this is a bit strange? Maybe they don't want something so daft. But actually, I think a lot of people were missing that too. And the lovely thing was, I mean, I do sing for a living, but the discos weren't part of that. They were much more pure. They were literally like, it was like sort of teenage me, you know, coming out and saying, you know,
it was so music. Girlish and cute and innocent. And the way the kids, I mean, what did the kids think when you first said, okay, mommy's got this idea, we're going to, I mean, I assume the disco ball is not there all the time. Was it
actually
always
there? I'm in the kitchen and now.
Are the streamers always? Oh my God, I love that. That was one of my questions. Is that always there?
Nothing got put up for this.
So that was just in situ originally. And then you were looking at it one day and you were like, let's make a party.
Well, actually, Richard said it, because he said, why didn't we do a live stream, like a sort of party set? We'll just do a disco, you know, just do your disco songs and we'll sing it. You know, you can do like a solo show, basically, because I was watching online all these amazing, talented musician friends of mine who were accompanying themselves on the piano or guitar or violin. And it was so beautiful. And I was just thinking, why did I not continue my piano lesson? I can't play well enough to do this. So I felt really useless, actually. So when he suggested it, I thought, well, let's give it a shot. You know, it's a bit of fun, but I thought people would kind of make fun of me. And I don't think I even talked it through with the kids massively, because, you know, for them, it was just my, you know, me singing into the back of Rich's phone. Our youngest was 14 months at the time. So I guess, Jess, you must have been about 4. Ray was 7. They were little, you know, they weren't really thinking about it. So we just had it like a family party. And then once we got such a lovely response from people, we thought it's more Richard and I. We thought, well, let's just keep this going. And it gave us a nice distraction. But I have to say, I don't know about you, but I was so moved by so many things I saw online that were like that, like really simple. Like, there was a guy who was just live streaming his dog walks, or I'd find myself going on Instagram Live and it'd be someone, you know, carving a pumpkin or making their own stencils.
100%. 100%.
Oh, cute. We're watching this now. Okay. Let's just be in this little moment together. It's like walking into a strange little room, wasn't it? Like, here we are. There's only six of us.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I got my kids doing those Joe Wicks videos in the mornings, you know, like I thought, what do I do with my children? I mean, I don't know if you felt like this, but I kind of always thought it's always been overwhelming, multiple children and chaos. But I never really fully appreciated the chaos and how many children I had till we were all in lockdown. And
it was totally fucking
overwhelming.
I know, I've had too many.
Exactly. Did you have that thought? I was like, what have I done?
I don't know what I was thinking. This is actually ludicrous. And meanwhile, everybody's like, okay, now get them all set up with a homeschool. How does that work?
Totally. I remember having like Teddy and Charlie, like at the time Charlie was like five, so there's no way I was getting him to sit in front of a screen all day. But I had like Teddy there and like Charlie there, and they'd get up and they'd move around and then they'd get in a fight with each other, and then like Coco would need me, and then like Bo would start crying, and it was just like, what the fuck? Do you know what I mean? Because like normally it was like Teddy and Charlie would be at school, like Bo would sleep a lot because he was a baby, and then I could just like focus on Coco, and then they'd come home, and it would, and then it was like all of a sudden they were all there just with different needs, and they were all getting on top of each other too because they had no friends. They had
and they were scared too, a bit worried about
of course.
No, we had exactly the same thing going on. It was really stressful. But you know, at least it was a shared stress. It was quite nice to know that everybody was feeling the same stuff. And there was lots of people I started following on Twitter or on Instagram who were quite good at making light of this tension. So I kind of felt like I wasn't on my own. It wasn't like it wasn't a solo stress.
No, I know my friends would kind of share these like viral TikTok things of like basically just moms drinking during the day.
Exactly.
and taking straws like in the size of a massive juice can, but really it was just like boxed wine. And all those ones that like
all of that.
Every parent overwhelmed. It was like very reassuring because that judgment came in. I was like, I am failing at whatever this thing is right now.
Definitely.
Whatever this lockdown thing is, I am crapping it. Do you know, I'm like, Rob, again, it was kind of a different thing because Rob would be kind of like, he'd do his COVID karaoke. He would sing in the computer and he'd like doodle all day and do his art. And I feel like he was actually quite content for a bit just to be in a room, not on the road, and just focus on something completely different. But then I think, like you, I imagine it became incredibly frustrating to not be able to go out and perform and be on the road and do the things he was used to. I think there was a part of him that really enjoyed it at first because he wasn't, he didn't have to leave his family and be all over the place. But then I think he felt creatively freaked out because after, you know, I don't know, 2 months of drawing, he then was like, oh, wait, music, my career, what do I do?
Yeah. And also just, you know, the noise of so many friends who work in the music industry, both, you know, crew side and musician side, everybody getting really worried and scared about the future. That was,
that was
hard to see as well. Yeah. And I think in a way that it's made me appreciate now my role in things in terms of like the actual economy of industry. I think because everybody's always on the road all the time, I wasn't really thinking about the fact that if I do a gig, I actually make sure that a certain number of people actually receive employment for the day. And I don't think I was really thinking about that because if they weren't going to do my gig, they'd be doing another gig. And, you know, everybody's always working. But suddenly when shows started to come back in, I was like, oh, actually, this is really nice. This is about everybody coming back to work.
Everyone, exactly.
Yeah. So I've got more.
Everyone has mouths to feed.
Exactly. And just everybody feeling, you know, happy to be needed and doing what they do, and the stuff that they've spent years getting the expertise for has been really, really nice to see that. So that's been really good. Definitely.
I've noticed in Rob a deep gratitude too that's come about in exactly that, in being able to provide for the people he normally provides for, in doing the things that maybe, not that he would take them for granted, but maybe they were glossing over in a certain way because they were so habitual.
Exactly. Now, you take it for granted.
Yeah, I feel like he's got a real appreciation, gratitude, enthusiasm for doing shows again. Do you know what I mean? And maybe that's, these silver linings that we talk about.
And I love my work more than ever, actually. I love performing. And I think, you know, every gig we've done this summer, I've been like, this is actually really incredible. I'm very lucky to be doing what I do. I really love it very much. So I did definitely miss it. And it's quite nice to miss things sometimes, isn't it? Maybe it more is. In retrospect, now that I know that it came back.
Yeah.
Again.
When you're allowed to go back.
Sure I was going
to
work.
Yeah. And then in the midst of it, you thought, oh my God, is this the end? It was maybe not as a rewarding a feeling.
No, it definitely wasn't. It was just a bit strange. And also Richard and I were a bit like, we haven't really got anything else we can do. But actually we did start building a few other things. I started my podcast just that year. So that was helpful. They were the only conversations, like good conversations I had pretty much.
Totally. That was what I liked about a podcast, was just talking to people. Oh my God, just to hear another human voice and like.
Yeah, and not be interrupted as well. I could go in a room and lock myself away and be like, I'm recording.
In the cupboard. Well, that's just like how I told Rob to piss off just now. It's like, I'm recording.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you find, like, how did you, I mean, I don't know what Richard's edge was for him, but how did you guys navigate as a couple we were in this incredibly stressful situation. You've got 5 boys at home. How did you guys manage the dynamic between the two of you in the backdrop of all the uncertainty and all the stresses? Like, how did you pivot from it?
I guess we know each other pretty well in terms of what makes us tick. And I think both of us like having something on the horizon. We're both better when we kind of got little things to potter on and jobs and projects. So I think once we sort of worked, I think the disco actually was a massive deal for us because it gave us both things we could focus on. So even during the week when, you know, there's all the normal ebb and flow of family life and all the stress that comes with it, it meant that we could always be getting the song sorted, or Richard would do an edit of a track, or he would, you know, change the key of something, or be getting stems from somebody. He'd be in the studio just sorting things. And I think that was really good for him because he felt like he had a project he could focus on. And for me, I'd be learning lyrics and stuff because I'd always do some covers, and it doesn't sound like much. And, you know, and most of the day was taken up with things like laundry and getting meals prepped and school stuff and all that kind of thing. But having another place in our heads we could go to was for both of us really important. And I think actually, you know, all throughout the time we've been together, which is nearly 20 years now, blimey.
Wow.
You know, whenever we've had anything stressful, I think you just start to learn, don't you, what works for each other and for both of us. We both like talking things through, but also focusing on something else for a little bit and just keeping busy. I think we both, we're both at our worst when we feel like we haven't really got a job to be getting on with or a project. That's when we kind of rattle around a little bit and get a bit snappy. I don't think that suits either of us, actually.
I think that's how Rob and I are too. I think we're kind of dreamers. Do you know what I mean? We like imagining possibilities, creative possibilities, you know, playing them out and getting giddy and excited about creating something creating. I think creating is really big between us. And I think we think about, oh, wouldn't that be, you know, and I think it's always joy led, you know, and like you guys, music is kind of the foundation of everything in our house and just the play and the, and I think we're just two big kids. So I think that's why when you showed the disco performances in your living room, I've really resonated. It was just like, it was there. You were completely vulnerable and playful in a time that didn't feel playful. And, you know, and I loved it when the kids started kind of, there was one where I saw where the kids were fighting over a watch or something, and you just incorporated it into the lyrics and they broke your light, you know, and you just kept rolling with it. And I just I really understand your play because I think it's similar to how we play. And I think we're the same way. I think the way that we de-stress, I mean, and sometimes I work out, but it hasn't been recent. But the way we de-stress is we imagine, we create, we give ourselves to-do lists of goals we have and
That's
things
nice.
We want to, you know, But I do. I think a busy mind is a happy mind sometimes.
So do you both like to sort of picture things and then try and make them a reality? Is that kind of the way you both work with
stuff? I think so. I think it always is like an authentic thing. It's never like we, you know, it's not like, oh, today's Tuesday, let's create. Do you know what I mean? It's, well, on the docket, it's 11 a.m. What's the creation of the day? I think we just kind of organically, you know, I can't play any instruments, neither can Rob. I'm a terrible singer. So we've got Rob can sing, but I'm not musically talented like Richard is. So we're never going to be a musical act together. But I think that we're both, you know, performing hams. We really like comedy, dark comedy, silly comedy. Mm-hmm. And we picture things. I don't know, whether it's watching a TV show or listening to a show, or like we just, you know, Rob loves to watch music on YouTube, different performances, you know, and then we come up with just abstract things. And we just kind of, it starts with laughter, I think, of things that make us feel happy. And then we go, oh, what if we did that? You know, and we just kind of, I don't know, what would you call it? Like a creative freestyle. It just happens.
I think so. And it's also both, it sounds like both of you are just, you're really good at looking outside of yourself to see what's out there to keep you being inspired and stimulated. Because I think you do sometimes meet people who are in a creative job, but they're maybe not that much in love with what they do anymore. Yeah. And it's quite baffling. I mean, I've met a lot of musicians actually where you think they've sort of lost their love of why they do what they do, really. But I think if you keep looking at things that give you that feeling, then you keep really engaged and excited because there's always new things to learn and new stuff to try and people who can inspire you. And I think if you could keep that relationship with something that gives you that happy feeling in your heart, then you actually stay, you get out of bed easier, like the day is full of possibility. It's the best way to be, actually, if you can keep it. You have to work at it sometimes, but I do think it's, if you can keep that going, then you'll lead a happier life, I reckon.
Well, I think it was so easy in the pandemic. I mean, both, much like you guys, both our careers kind of stopped on what we knew. Do you know what I mean? It's like Rob couldn't go out and perform and I couldn't go out and act. And it was like, but I just think if we give up on that fire that feeds that and that creativity, will just get incredibly depressed. And I think that's where, you know, art, I think Rob, like you struggled to create music in that moment, like writing music for him was really difficult, but for some reason he was able to funnel it into art. And for me, I've always been incredibly passionate about wellness and I pretty much just live in athleisure. So I was like, I'm going to make athleisure better. That is what I'm going to do because I'm literally wearing the same things every single day and I feel disgusting. And how can I wear these things every day and make them
good
better and feel good? Because I think it was like that thing, chasing that good feeling. And I think if we hadn't had those things to focus on, those creative paths that kind of really did open up because what we normally do couldn't be done.
Yeah.
I think it would have been a very different experience for us because it was so difficult to get through each day in kind of this perilous feeling in this, does this never end? And when do we actually like see someone? It was like never in our lives before. We've been so apart from people. Like even if someone's 10 feet next to you in their house, you're apart from them. And it was just
so strange.
It felt like existing in the abyss. And how do you hold on to something that feels rooted in anything?
And so and I think also feeling like yourself, because a lot of things, people you see, you know, your friends, your family, your colleagues, they reflect parts of you back at yourself. And when you haven't got that anymore, you can make you feel a little bit like you've lost your identity at times.
Totally. Yeah. It was like you're untethered. There's no one like your friends, your routine, all of the things that make up your day, your life are things that kind of tether you to this earth. And all of a sudden everything was just like suspended and it was so confusing.
Yeah.
And then there was, it was kind of like, I felt like, you know, like we talk about parenthood where sometimes you feel like you're nailing it. And then like the next week you feel like a complete failure. I feel like there'd be days where I'd be like, yes, I can do this pandemic thing. Like, I am committed. I am energized. Like, I've got things I'm going to do with my day. Yes, yes, yes. And then literally 3 days later, you're like on the phone to someone going, I just can't handle it. This is so horrible.
I know.
When is it going to end?
Sometimes in the same day, to be honest.
In the same day. It would just go in like these waves where you're like, that's okay. I can handle this. I got this. And then literally the next day, you'd be just on the floor in the same clothes that you'd slept in going, I feel so down and I feel so lost.
True. Did you get time? You said exercise is important to you. Did you find
exercise
time for that?
Exercise has always been important to me. Well, I did kind of my own silly, the reason I haven't been working out lately is I've had an injury. But what I did was I kind of did my own silly version of workouts. I started the pandemic because honestly, the first weeks, I literally didn't even get out of my same clothes. Like, I just didn't know what to do with myself. And finally I thought, that's it. This is ridiculous. You know how to take care of yourself. Like, even though there's, you know, because I've always been with fitness, I've always enjoyed classes because I like being with other people. Like, I actually enjoy, I quite like dancing too. So I would go to a dance class and do dancing, you know, or even a yoga class. But I liked, my favorite thing was a dance class that I went to and I met my friends there and we'd go in the morning and it was just a bit of fun. And I'm a terrible dancer, but it's just a, you know, it's fun. And all of a sudden that was gone. And it was like, as if I didn't know what to do with myself. And I'm lucky enough that I had gym equipment and a gym in my house. And I thought, after a while, I thought, this is just fucking ridiculous. Go down there, just dance, you know, dance like no one is watching you in your basement, go walk on the treadmill, do something, you'll feel better. And as soon as I started doing that, I would feel better. So then I was like, okay, how do I bring this to people who don't necessarily have a gym? And also just make it a bit playful, because it really doesn't have to be a hard workout to get yourself to feel better. It can just be silliness. So then I started doing supermarket sweep workout. So I would take something from the fridge, like a liter of milk, and I would take stuff like a jar of pickles and a bottle of water and create like funny little workouts on Instagram, you know, like home workouts, like 5 minute arms or 10 minute legs. And I would use things in your kitchen where you needed no equipment. And I remember I'm sure you were the same, but we became huge binge watchers of TV during the pandemic, watching literally any shit that was out there. And we got really obsessed with the Tiger King, as did many people. So we did
Tiger King. God, I forgot about that.
Yeah, we did a Tiger King workout and I had Rob dressed as Joe Tiger. What was his name? Joe Tiger? What's his name?
No.
What was his name?
Joe Exotic.
Joe Exotic. That's it. Yeah. Joe Exotic. So I had Rob dressed Joe Tiger would be good. Well, also because Rob's got his tiger pants. So I was like, just like you with all the outfits and the disco ball already in the living room. I'm like, you've already got tiger pants. So then we just did a silly like tiger themed workout. And Rob was wearing a cowboy hat and tiger pants and cowboy boots. And we did, I think I was wearing animal print. You know, we were just like you. I think it was
just looking for the fun.
Looking for the fun and looking to give other people the fun, and in doing so, giving ourselves fun.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it is. Fun is therapy, man. It really
definitely.
Is.
100%. I agree with you.
You know,
and sometimes as well, when everything is a bit heavy, you know, it's good to do something that is really lighthearted, because lots of people were doing stuff that was kind of leaning into the heavy, but I didn't feel ready for that.
No,
I didn't really want to. I wasn't ready to reflect. I wanted to escape.
Totally. I was conflict averse. I was,
absolutely.
I was not wanting to embrace the heavy bits because it already felt so heavy.
Exactly.
It was like, I think you and I was reading in your thing saying you were working on being a people pleaser, which I am a guilty, you know, self-described.
Yeah.
Oh, like chronic, Rob will tell you, just chronic people pleaser. And so I think people pleasers are conflict averse. And
so
feel like we would never be the people to lean into the sad, because we would always want to like please the happy feeling. So I feel like that's what we did, is we pleased the happy feeling. Because the other thing I props to people leaning into it, but I was just like, let me like leaning Tower of Pisa away from this. It feels fucking terrible.
Yeah, it's true.
Now, this was the other thing I wanted to know, because like in the midst of this, because I was thinking about all your five boys, because again, mm-hmm. four kids for me was, you know.
Four's loads.
I don't know. Five is, I mean, it's like another, it's an extra human on top of it. And boy energy. But you're like, so what's interesting about you is you're kind of like, because I didn't start having kids till my 30s. And I always think to myself, because I'm so tired constantly, I think, oh, what would have been like if I had kids young? Would it feel different? Would I have more energy? That would have been maybe nice to experience what that would feel like. But you've actually done, you've done it in your 20s, 30s, and what, were you 40 when you had your last? Or
not
you,
quite. I was 39 quite. When I had Mickey, but yeah, pretty much.
That kind of thing, where the age
yeah.
range.
Yeah.
Where you kind of done both sides of the equation.
Yeah, and weirdly, I found my later pregnancies easier than my younger ones.
Really? That's very reassuring.
Yeah, my hardest one was my first by miles. But I did have something called preeclampsia, which I didn't know at the time. I was
struggling. That's dangerous.
Yes, that's why he was born 2 months early, because they basically had to deliver the baby so that I would be all right. But I just thought I was rubbish at being pregnant. Whereas when I got to having Mickey, my fifth one, I felt great. I found it really powerful. But I would say the perpetual tiredness, I don't know if you can avoid that. I think I can survive on not very much sleep. And because I can survive on it, that's basically what I then do. But that doesn't mean I wouldn't love some extra sleep. When I get the opportunity to sleep, I'm very, very good at it.
Happy.
I love it very much.
I kind of look at Rob sleeping. Like, it's Rob does not miss his hours of sleep. I sometimes look at him and I'm like, I could use the same amount of hours as you. I don't. Could use the same. And I look at it and it's quite remarkable that he manages to get in with four kids a good 12-hour shift of sleeping.
That is most impressive.
It is.
How do you ever get a bit, because like yesterday morning, so we did a gig on, when are we now? Sunday night. Yesterday morning, I got up same as normal, 6:30, 7:00. And Richard didn't come down till about 10-ish.
nice moves, Richard.
I find it quite hard not to then mention this 3-hour difference
times. I fully get pissed off about it. Like I'm laughing about it, but don't think I don't resent it on some level. Like there's definitely like we went to Euro Disney this weekend. Now I don't.
That was fun.
It was really fun, but like I don't really want to get up at the crack of dawn and like put in like a 14-hour day at Disney. But I will do that. But like His Highness did not join us till about 2 p.m. every day, and he was like,
even at Disney,
he rolled up with those Mickey ears around 2:30. And by the way, that was him making an effort to get up early.
Wow.
And then it was like that thing, I don't know if your kids ever do this, but I'm sure they do. But with my kids in particular, daddy shows up and they're like, daddy. And he is like, it's like Santa Claus just came. He's the most amazing human. They're like, you're so fun. Yes. You know, and you're like there with like mini ears drooping and like some crumbled churro on your sweatshirt going like,
yeah,
hey, mom's been here all day. Mom's really
exactly.
tired.
And I know.
Do. What is it? I can move past it, but yeah, I do get resentful about the amount of sleep my husband gets versus how much sleep I get.
Well, I think it's that thing, as you say, of like when you're kind of grumpy and annoyed by the end of the day because you're tired, and then everybody else is like, they've all just woken up when they wanted to wake up. And
totally.
Like, Richard and I, because he's not like getting up like dramatically later.
Right.
So there
he's not doing Cinderella moves.
No. There isn't the big
the big entrance, in the middle of the afternoon. Tea time, Richard comes up. But still, I'm going to say, I mean, obviously Rob's an extreme case of absolutely everything, but like, I would still say a 3-hour time difference would bother me. I would be like, okay. Well,
it definitely got mentioned.
Oh, by the way, as it should, Sophie, as it should. I feel like if you are going to sleep in, then you need to be at least able to handle the comment of.
It's true. It's bloody true. I'm going to quote you on that.
Yeah. When you get 5 hours of sleep, 3 hours is a huge percentage.
So massive.
Massive.
I get a bit cantankerous about it sometimes, but.
Is he good? Is he good at like giving you, like, if he knows he's kind of like pushed the edge on this and he knows he's kind of like, is he good? Like then the next day on going, you know what? So I got up a little bit late yesterday. Why don't you sleep in a bit? I've got
I just sort of do the mornings. It's just
by
like
the way,
a
neither
thing.
Is Rob. Yeah. By the way, neither is Rob.
And I think also I don't really necessarily want that to happen because I do actually quite like the fact that I get up with the kid. Yeah. And we have breakfast together. And like this morning I got them all like up, breakfasted, out the door, and they need to leave for school. I quite like the fact that I still do that stuff, even though I also resent the lack of sleep.
Like, I do think there is this like weird thing that like, I mean, I'm just speaking from personal, this like personal, you know, experience, a slight weird martyrdom thing I like to do with myself.
Oh my God, that's so true. Damn it.
It's like I like to begrudge it because I'm really, really fucking tired and overwhelmed. But at the same time, I want to be the one who's tired and overwhelmed because I'm such a good mom. You know, that thing where it's like, because I give of myself, because I'm selfless. And I'm like addicted to that thought of like begrudging it and resenting it a little bit, but at the same time being addicted to me being the one to do it. Like I wouldn't know what to do with myself if I wasn't.
Okay. No, because it's part of the role.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, well, I would love to have time to do that, but obviously I was up, you know, doing that. And then I've got to
Must
sort
be
that
nice,
and,
Robbie Williams, but exactly. It is like if someone else did the stuff, if I was, I don't know, if the roles were reversed, if I was Rob and he was me.
No, I'd really struggle with that.
I'd struggle with that. My ego would, I don't know what it would do. Isn't that
weird? No, I'm the same. I'd struggle with it and I'd feel like I need to make excuses for myself all the time. I wouldn't be able to just be like, yep, I slept till 3.
Totally.
So what?
But by the way, Rob has no problem with it. He's perfectly positioned in his role because he's like, babe, I need my sleep. And I'm like, okay. But he does not, I don't think he needs, I think it's like a woman thing. He doesn't want, he's not interested in the martyrdom schism. He just wants to get his sleep. He's in the like, I'm going to take care of myself and this is what I need. And so we're good like this. Yeah. And
do the kids ever go and wake him or they know to,
they
just come down,
they
go
try on a few occasions. They have, but he is then a very grumpy bear. I think we've all learned as much as we like to fuck with him and wake him up sometimes that actually we all lose out because then he's just like, he's just grumpy. No,
he doesn't
wins.
Deal with it. He can't deal with the,
he really can't.
Latterly, yeah.
He just, I don't know. It makes him depressed. He literally can't function.
Yeah. Okay.
But I also think, you know, in defense of his very irregular sleep pattern, he doesn't get to bed till like 5 in the morning or 4 in the morning because he's on like Radio Rob in his head.
Yeah.
And he's looking up things on the, like my husband actually sleeps with the computer.
Okay.
Like he cradles it like a security blanket. Like it's the threesome we're having. It's like me, Rob, and our lover MacBook. Like there are times when I whack myself on the computer in the night or he flicks it off the bed and there's this huge loud crash and I jump up because I think he just because of his, you know, addictions and he can't take sleeping pills. So he can't take anything to go to bed. I think
so he's just worrying till he wears himself out.
He's worrying. And then I think his addiction is really technology now, you know, it will always find something. So his is YouTube. You know, he'll do podcasts, but really YouTube, music, interviews, comedy. And
just looking stuff up all the time.
All the time.
Yeah.
All the time.
I actually kind of get, I sort of relate to that. I kind of, because even though I'm often very tired, I still take a while to fall asleep. And I do kind of wake up again at night. So I very, very, very rarely get to sleep before midnight.
Me neither.
Yeah. And I quite like it, if I'm honest. I quite like that time where I get to just, like, I know people say it's terrible going on your phone in your bed and all that, but
no,
I actually really like it. So I don't really want to stop.
No, it's the same. Well, I think he's taken it to the extreme, but I'm the same way. I think also when you've got so many kids, it's like you finally tuck them into bed. Like the day has not really been yours. You know, it's like 8:30 PM or 9 PM at this point when you're like, everyone's just shut in and sleeping. And you're like, if you go to bed within the hour, you don't get any you time whatsoever.
Exactly.
And it's nice to just veg out, like completely.
So nice.
Like just do nothingness, either watch something stupid or go on your, like where you don't have to be doing anything important.
Exactly.
And if you, and then if it's like you go to bed early, you didn't really get any time. It's like, I like to have like a glass of wine, watch something dumb, get back to emails. Like, you know what I mean? And so yeah. I'm like you, I kind of, I should go to bed earlier, but I actually can't because I need to whir a bit.
Yeah. 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 And like decompress a little bit.
And decompress.
Yeah, no, I'm the same as you. And sometimes I'll read or something like that, but sometimes I want something where I'm a bit more of a passive participant in it. So something where it'll just give me information or do something, entertain me, and I don't have to actually actively
engage.
Do anything. Yes.
That's how I feel. I feel like since I've become a parent, I like passive entertainment, which is why I think we watch, I mean, we watch an obscene amount of reality shows.
Do you?
We just, yeah, because it's like, it's,
I love those too.
It's like mindless, and at the same time, it's really fascinating and specific, the interactions amongst people.
Yes.
Like it's so interesting to watch the relationships between people. And there's some things that are so like overlaying that you see, that you understand. And you're kind of like in Shakespeare where the audience sees it from every perspective,
yes.
You know, and I quite like that. It doesn't involve me to think too hard. And yet I can passively enjoy these interplays. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. They're so well put together as well. Whoever does like the sort of editing and storyline stuff, they're really good, aren't they?
They're so good. We've been watching Married at First Sight.
Oh, that's the one I need to start. Is it the UK one?
Yeah. And then on
it looks really good.
Oh no, it's great. Like, I mean, first of all, the backdrop is already incredible when you get two people to marry each other that have never met.
I know. Incredible. Okay. I'm in. Yeah.
It's
great
beyond
story.
Fucking mental. And then that's just episode one. So it's
yes,
like, you're going to go places.
Even though none of them, I think, have resulted in a happy marriage.
I think I think there was a couple, I can't remember if it was the America. I think it was, maybe it was Australia. The couple got married. There's like two or three.
The one from America, the first one in America, they are still together, Jamie and something. I know this because I watched it.
There's a blonde one.
Yeah.
Like strawberry blonde. And she married like a kid's PE teacher. They had a baby. And then the Australian couple, she's Greek and his name is Michael. I can't remember her name. They're engaged and having a baby.
Great.
Like,
happy for them.
I'm going to say most of them end in total misery. But there's like a few, I guess you throw enough at a fan, something's going to hit. There's
yes.
been a few where marriage and babies have ensued. I would
have
say
you watched any of Love is Blind? That
hell yeah, of course.
That was that's my favorite. I love
that. That was the lockdown special, along with The Tiger King, was Love is Blind.
Yeah.
And then I've seen season two. Apparently
you can't get better telly than someone proposing through a wall. It just,
I know.
It doesn't,
I mean,
get better than that.
Sometimes I kind of like look at myself like, where have we come to in society where people are willing to fucking do this? But at the same time, I'm one of those people willing to watch it.
Oh, God, so yeah. Count me in.
I mean, that couple in the first season got married.
Yeah. Yeah.
They got married
and
stayed. And in fact, two of them.
Yes, there's more success with Love is Blind than there is with Meredith.
Why do we think that? Why do we think, what do we think is the root of like why a wall is better for getting married? Just, is it because you're getting to know the person?
Yeah,
before?
I think the fact that they actually get to speak before they're at the altar might have something to do with it. It hasn't just been a team of experts.
I like, by the way, I really want to know, like, the team of experts. I really want to know what's actually happening in the casting when they're pairing people.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
I
yeah.
mean, it, like, you know, in this one, yeah, I just want to know what the common, or do they think, okay, this will be, I've got the sick in me has to believe that on certain pairings, they're like, this is going to be terrible. Let's put these two people together.
God,
this
yeah,
will
definitely.
Make great TV.
Like 100%.
Some of them, they're trying to create love stories. You know, but other ones, you've got to know that,
yeah,
because I mean, even, you know, X Factor, there's the great acts and then there's the kind of like not so great acts, but both
yeah.
of them made up the program. So
it's
I have to imagine that on Married at First Sight, they're definitely
yeah.
going for the combo of great
100%.
Matches and terrible matches.
So much, it's also like telly, I just don't trust telly at all.
No.
Like it's got its own agenda. So
oh, it's got its dark forces for sure.
Yeah.
I'm willing to be a participant in those dark forces, but it's definitely got some like nefarious undertones of what
definitely.
They're doing. Yeah. Like they're not rooting for the success of all of these people.
No, they want good telly, thanks.
Yeah. They want really good telly. Did you ever see the one in Australia where I think his name was, he was a stripper and his name was Bronson, I want to say. And she was like hooking up with someone else. And both stayed with their partner so that they could keep hooking up with each other.
Oh, golly. Like, no, I didn't watch the Australian one. I know it's supposed to be amazing, but it had so like good. 30 something episodes when I looked at starting
it's a commitment.
I thought this is a bit too much for me. I mean, I did watch I have gone deep with some things, like when I first started watching Love Island, I then went back and watched like early series of Love Island. So I have I have played the long game.
We've played the long game. Shows. We go in the long game with Love Island. It's one of those things where it's, you know, it's definitely like several months and you're like, at the beginning, you're like, I don't know if I can do this. I don't know if I care about these people.
Yeah.
I'm not interested. And then literally like a month and a half later, you're like, babe, we've got to get home. Love Island's on.
Love Island. And then it's always, do we watch tonight's episode or do we catch up on yesterday's?
Totally.
And we normally go back and catch up and then we fall asleep watching
Saturday?
It.
Is it Saturdays where they just do the like bullshit recap thing and you're
that's rubbish. Don't need
and
that.
Then you,
don't need
and
that.
Then you forget that it's a Saturday and you're like, oh God, skip. Yep. Yep. Well, there's Saturday ruined for us.
So true.
Isn't
we're exactly the same.
We're the same people. Honestly, we get really excited about these kinds of things. I would think that I would guess that people listening might think that like you and Richard or me and Rob have these like really rock and roll evenings and there's like all this like sexy, cool music stuff happening. It's like this is actually happening.
This is what's happening. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do the kids, when you guys are being silly, like, for example, when you did the disco stuff, I know the kids, the smaller kids were too small to really even, like, know what was happening. But do they get, like, embarrassed when you and Richard are doing silly things and you're in costumes? Are they into it?
I think it's very easy to embarrass them. But quite often the times when I'm like, oh, I'm being really embarrassing right now, my eldest will say, oh, you always say that, but it's actually not that bad. I think they're just really used to it. Yeah. I think the tone of my embarrassing moments has been the same since Doc. Yeah. So they don't know any different.
I think that's like our kids. They have no idea that we actually are embarrassing them. Because it's just been that.
It's just how it always is. Yeah.
It's like BC. It's just what's happened.
I mean, I know that some of the younger ones now, if I'm taking them to school, I'm not allowed to sing anywhere near the school gates.
Really? Yeah. Oh, they put that rule in.
Oh, yeah. I hate that. And then my youngest really likes listening to music. So I used to play music like in his buggy while we were pushing him. And then they suddenly were like, we can't have any music near the school gates. So things, we've kind of got to that level. But generally speaking, I think they just don't know any difference. So, you know,
I love that the school gates have become the like, parameter. Like you can be mom until you get to the gates.
Yeah, maybe like a road mile, like little bit of gap either side of it, to be honest. Not even just the gates.
It's quite a large parameter. A block down, two blocks down.
Exactly.
Don't wear the sparkly outfit. You can sing.
What would they do
if you came in full disco attire? What would happen?
I think they'd be a bit confused by it. And my eldest one, so Sonny, he's kind of into fashion anyway. And I thought he was always very supportive of everything I wore. And someone said with the discos, they were like, oh, you know, I can't believe you're wearing that leotard. Your eldest must be so embarrassed. And I said, actually, he's really supportive. And I told Sonny about this later and he was like, no, actually, sometimes you do take it too far. And I think you do wear things you shouldn't. So, yeah, I think there's definitely a line that can be crossed and I've crossed it.
No, before. I think you should always cross it. I think you should continue to cross it. Don't back down, Sophie. You're not allowed to back down. No.
I don't know any other way to be.
I don't either.
You know, this is
it. It's fun. Like I'm looking at you and you've got your fun sweater and you've got your fun wallpaper. Like it'd be so sad if it was all just like gray. Do you know what I mean?
True.
Like
you don't want that.
You don't want that. The kids don't want that, no matter what
they don't really. Exactly. I agree with you.
Are any of them super, I know you said your youngest loves music, but any of them following in your footsteps with music, do you find that like that's what they did when they, because like our kids all had different edges and I guess they're all different ages and expressed it differently. But as your kids are older than my kids, some of them, did they ever express themselves with music to come away from their edge?
Yeah, definitely my eldest. It's a big thing for him. Yeah, he listens to music all the time. And I think for him, music is very much an emotional support, and it's life, actually. I mean, Sonny's just got music playing all the time. If it's not coming out of his room, it's on his headphones. He listens to music to and from school. He goes to gigs now. So, yeah, big thing for him. But funnily enough, my next one down, Kit, he's not very interested in music at all, really. Like, he doesn't mind having it on sometimes, but he doesn't go towards it. It's not his thing, which I quite like in a way because it's so different from the rest of us. But then my little ones, yeah, they love it as well. So I don't know. I mean, that'd be interesting to see if it actually becomes any of their day jobs, but it's definitely something that they have as part of the way that they, you know, make sense of the world around them. Yeah. And I think that's really good. That's all I really wanted for them, actually, just to have it there as a companion, because that's where music, that's what it's where it starts and ends for me as well. Yeah.
And does Sonny, now that you're able to go back out on the road, does he come with you and see you in these performances and kind of realize what his mommy does? I mean, I'm sure he knows what his mommy does outside of the house.
Yeah.
Really get a sense of
not
what
so
mom
much
does.
Sonny, actually, not massively. I think now that he's that bit older, he kind of wants to do his own thing more. But my 13-year-old and my 10-year-old, I took them around a lot over the summer. They came on the tour bus a few times and came to different festivals. I mean, they're not particularly interested in watching the gigs because they've seen it and they're a bit like, we've done that now.
Been there, done
more
that.
The same. But they definitely like, you know, the sort of hustle and bustle of being out on the road and being on the tour bus and hanging out with the crew and going and seeing other things in the festival field. They're quite into all of that. I think that's quite fun.
I think it's cool.
Yeah, it's cool. And this week, actually, well, no, this week, last week, I did my first thing where I took Sonny and Kit with me and we did a TV show, and we've never done anything like that before, but we did this program called Lego Masters, and that was really
Lego
fun.
Masters. What's Lego Masters?
So it's a show where we were one of three teams building Christmas-themed brick, what do you call it?
Like Lego
builds. And so it's going to be on Channel 4 at Christmas time. And it was actually really nice because we had two nights in Poland shooting and filming because there was already a set there because they were filming their series there. And it was really nice because we'd never done anything like that before, but it was just the two teenagers. And I did really like that. That was really special. We wouldn't normally get the opportunity to do something like that. So that was fun.
Well, I love that adventure. I love that adventure for you guys.
Yeah, and it was nice. We don't, because I'm sure it's the same for you, but in the house, the little ones are the ones that demand the most from me. And they are like, basically our house revolves around Mickey, to be honest, the 3-year-old. He's the one who says like, play with me now, or I want to do this. And I'm, you know, there for him all the time. But I think having that time with the big boys was really special, because otherwise I don't get that time with them, but also they don't get that time with each other. So that was really cool.
No, I love that. It is a challenge when you've got four to kind of carve out, especially with the older ones, it can be a little more insular within their own worlds. To, you know, and the little ones are so loud and vocal about what they need.
Yeah.
It's hard to kind of give each one specific time. And also, like you said, you know, certain relationships of the two big boys together, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because the dynamics change. It's like sometimes, you know, it's the baby together or it's the oldest with the young, you know, it's like, and they each have their own special dynamic. And it's hard to give each pod its moment and make sure they all have that relationship with each other. It's very
exactly
cool. Okay, so that's going to be on Channel 4
at Christmas
fall. At Christmas time. Okay, well, I'll be watching that. Well, I know I've taken up just a bucket load of your time, and I know you're constantly spinning plates, and I want to thank you for taking this time to sit with me and share.
I could talk to you for longer.
I can talk to you for the whole day. I'm like, I'll come over. I kind of need to see. What I'd really like is to come to your disco parlor and disco with you.
If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe. I mean, it's actually begging. Rate us, review us, all the 5 stars, all the bells and whistles, please, wherever you find your podcasts. Seriously, desperate for a good review. Also, if you want to get in touch, you can find me on Instagram. My handle is Ida Field Williams, so please let us know what you think of the podcast, and even who you might like to have on as a guest. You never know, we might actually be able to make it happen. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Postcards from the Edge is a Blueprint Pods production. Executive producer Sophie Palak and producer Warren Borg.
Postcards from the Edge.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.